And now, with over 25 years of experience integrating mental health and spirituality, the author of Reclaiming Authenticity, When Ancestors Weep, and Redeeming the Bereaved, here is Dr. James Hauck.
Good evening, everybody, wherever you are in the world at this time, and welcome to Reclaiming Authenticity, finding one's courage to reclaim that which has always been in you. In fact, as one of my plaques that hangs in my office says, it does take a tremendous amount of courage and inner strength to change from what is known and comfortable to something which is new and fresh. And that which is unknown often contains our greatest potential. That to seek our potential by risking change is the path of true greatness. So again, welcome one and all to Reclaiming Authenticity. It certainly does take a lot of courage, because many times we do want to hang on to the past because we can't imagine something better in our lives, let alone discovering who we really are. I get mixed reviews whenever I bring that up with clients that I counsel. You know, they say, oh, well, that's an easy question, because they start rattling off, you know, what's on their driver's license. And I go, wait. That's, you know, not what we're talking about here. We're talking about discovering who we really are. And that's a dangerous question. It's dangerous because you have to confront everything in your life that doesn't want to change, that doesn't want to let go, you know, because it does. It involves us letting go of things such as our previous attitudes and our perceptions that no longer serve us or keep us wounded, and then taking on something better, in other words, more life-giving, and to be more authentic to who we truly are. Well, I'm Dr. James Hauck, and if you would like more information about me or to leave me your comments about tonight's show, I invite you to visit the website. It's www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. That's all one word. So www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. And these broadcasts are podcasted now, in case you want to go back and listen again, or you can go back into the archives and listen to previous shows. Just, again, go back onto the website and then just click on archives and then find the date of the broadcast you would like to listen to again. It is very easy to do. And if you're so inclined, you would like to call in and be part of tonight's show, I invite you to call that toll-free line. That's 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And give me your insights, your comments, or your thoughts on today's subject, the alchemy of authenticity, transforming dimensions of traumatic energy. Well, I am certainly very excited to be with you here tonight and every other Wednesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And I just wanted to say at the outset of this show that I am entering my fourth year with BBS Radio and the Reclaiming Authenticity broadcast. So, you know, so glad to be spending this time with all of you over these years. And since the beginning, if you've been with me all these years, you know that every broadcast focuses on the integration of our spirituality and our mental health, all within the context of our relationships that we have with ourselves, relationships that we have with others, and the relationship that we have with God or the divine. And you know that the whole reason why I place this integration of spirituality and mental health in relationships is because when you do think about it, we often receive our deepest physical, emotional, psychological, even spiritual wounds in relationships. We just can't get around it. We are indeed social beings. And yet, just as much as we experience this woundedness in relationships, we can discover our greatest healing, strength, peace, forgiveness, and love through healthier relationships. Well, for those of you who might be new to the program tonight, I just wanted to say from the outset that I am a firm believer that all of us come into this world already equipped and graced with everything we need for this life in terms of our giftedness or our skills, our talents, our strengths, character traits, you know, the very best parts of who we are. But yet, as we go along in life, sometimes, and maybe due to some unpleasant experiences, we may feel like we need to hide that skill, or hide those inner strengths, or hide that giftedness, or push those things way down so that others cannot see it and exploit them. Or maybe we were told that we would never amount to anything when we were younger, or whatever other voice we heard telling us that there's nothing special to us. And yet, at any rate, when we do not realize our giftedness and our strengths and our skills and character traits and everything, we often go through life then functioning from that place of woundedness or that victimization, instead of from a place of healing and wholeness and embracing our uniqueness, that acheatos. And everybody has that uniqueness about him. I explain it to kids who find it hard sometimes to grasp abstract notions. I say, you know, think of your uniqueness, your acheatos, and by the way, they love that word, acheatos, by looking at your thumbprint. You know, everybody has that. You know, everybody has a thumbprint, but no two are alike. So in other words, everybody has a uniqueness, but your uniqueness is totally on you. And they really seem to grasp that idea. They really get behind that uniqueness that they have. And of course, that, you know, leads them, their little curiosities to, well, what is my uniqueness? Or where do I look to find this? Or how will I know when I have it? And just wonderful, wonderful conversations I have with kids and adolescents regarding this. Because after all, they just want somebody to believe in them, to see them for who they are, and to remind them of that. And hopefully someday they are able to see that uniqueness in and of themselves. Well, at any rate, with the woundedness we run into through relationships, you know, we really don't have to look too far in relationships, you know, because they could just very well be within our own families. Or maybe we see them every day as coworkers or even friends or even acquaintances. But, you know, whenever we work on ourselves, whenever we find that healing in and of ourselves, whenever we discover our uniqueness, that acheatos, we transform. And we also transform others by our presence, our grace, and our understanding. In fact, I had a conversation today with a client who I just, you know, wanted to remind them that, look, never underestimate the value of your presence. It's that strong. You know, just never underestimate who you are with others. And so never underestimate your kindness, or your forgiveness, or your compassion, or just how you are with another person. Very, very transformative. Because, you know, when we are even more compassionate with ourselves, we can certainly be compassionate with others. And when we are able to forgive ourselves, we then can be more forgiving with others. And when we're able to live in gratitude with ourselves, and I mean grateful for everything that we've experienced, because those experiences, whatever we want to label them as, they have brought us to this very moment in our lives. When we're able to live in gratitude with ourselves, we then discover how this really opens up our hearts to see and live in gratitude with others. So all in all, first and foremost, transformation begins with us. Well, you know, as children, and I'm sure you know, probably out there nodding your head on this one, we were always comparing our physical scars with our friends to see who among us earned their badges, let's say, for courage or childhood courage. And these scars would then, you know, often be the results of skinned knees from bicycle accidents or cuts on our arms from climbing trees or even an occasional head-on collision with a teammate on the baseball field or wherever. Okay. And it's kind of interesting that in our little circles growing up, that whenever a friend showed us the scar on his leg or her leg, you know, they received, you know, while sledding last winter, we would quickly scan our bodies to see who could top that with the latest trip to the emergency room. And of course, there was always the kid who could just silence all of us just by lifting his shirt and showing off his scar from his appendectomy. So whatever they might be, our scars, when we were younger, were proudly displayed for all to witness and admire our heroism. Now, it should go without saying that this pastime is not limited to children. Adults, too, really play this game at church picnics and family gatherings or whenever boredom takes over. You know, somebody will usually begin by bragging about their latest injury during a long overdue home project or getting a knee replacement or who has the biggest scar, you know, on down their back, or even among women who had the most difficult cesarean delivery. But I believe there's a huge psychological difference between children showing off their battle scars and when adults do. And, you know, perhaps the reason is because adults may want to elicit more sympathy from their peers than children. In the clinical mental health counseling field, this attention-seeking behavior is commonly referred to as secondary gains. You know, like, what else do you get by showing off your scars? In other words, people might derive some psychological benefits such as sympathy or admiration or pity or whatever it is from others when they point out how difficult their lives have been and they have the scars to prove it. But you know, still, in counseling others, I'm always struck by how people often lead with their scars. And by that, I mean, when you meet somebody for the very first time, they go, "Hello, my name is, I'm a cancer survivor," or "I survived a car crash last year," or whatever other scar that they have received, emotional or otherwise. And, you know, by this, I also mean that a person's scars have become, in a sense, an identity. A means by which he or she wants to be known by others, and thereby often perpetuating an endless cycle of emotional victimization. I can't do this for one reason or another because, well, of what I've went through, or the scars I bear, or something. Now, don't get me wrong. Compassion and empathy are still the two most important features we need to have for others. Okay, and of course, you know, who are we to judge another person unless we've walked a mile in their shoes? But still, you know, some people who have been through difficult ordeals don't know how to stop picking at their wounds. Okay, now I'm not talking about the physical wounds here anymore. I'm talking about, let's get below the surface. Let's talk about the emotional wounds, the psychological wounds, even the spiritual wounds. You know, because for one reason or another, a scab, let's say, never forms on the top of the wounds of the physical and or emotional abuse or sexual abuse or even the death of a loved one. Not being ready for that, or some other traumatic injury or traumatic pain, emotional pain. And again, more often than not, it's easy to spot this kind of behavior through initial impressions. As I said, a lot of people lead with these scars. And just pay attention to how people present themselves and or how they describe their lives. You know, a lot of times it just might be too much information. And for that matter, start to pay attention to how you present yourself to others. Do you end up leading your scars before people really get to know you? Well, I have a story. It's definitely an example of a young man that I counseled decades ago. And just for the sake of anonymity, you know, his name is Josh. He was a 30-something-year-old man who I counseled for PTSD. And I'll never forget him. You know, he was a rather large man with piercing green eyes and a 3-inch scar across his left cheek from a knife wound. And I remember meeting him for the first time in the waiting room area of the local counseling agency. And as I introduced myself, came out with a smile and said, "Hello, I'm Dr. Houck." You know, he stood up with a glaring look. And I'm sure his intention was meant to intimidate me. And you know, from the anxiety that tightened across my chest, it must have worked. Because within the first session, Josh told me all the details of his trauma. You know, one night he was waiting for the subway in New York City, and he was attacked by 3 men with knives. And he remembers just standing there minding his own business, waiting for, you know, the subway. And he remembers catching just only a shadow of one of them out of the corner of his eye. And as he turned to see who it was, he was struck in the head with a blunt object from behind and a burning sensation he remembers on his face, causing him to fall down in a daze. And he remembers being stabbed a couple of times before, as he said, everything went black, and then I woke up in the emergency room with a concussion and several lacerations. Well, by the time I got to see him, it had been 2 years since this attack, and Josh's PTSD symptoms were clearly evident. He had a startle response from loud noises, and he did not like seeing shadows. He had a major discomfort around subways or trains. He had sleepless nights. He had severe bouts of panic in crowded places, and so on and so on and so on, which he never dealt with. In fact, as he said, they had begun to increase in their intensity along with his anti-anxiety medication. Not to mention, every time he looked in the mirror, he was reminded of this attack. Well, as we talked, it made sense to me, given his traumatic experience, that he would lead with his scars. And deep down inside, he had secretly vowed that he would never feel that vulnerable again, and therefore he would use his scars to intimidate others. And it worked. He had successfully managed to isolate and insulate himself from others, especially strangers. And during one session, Josh mentioned that he believed everything happened for a reason, but he could not fathom why the attack happened to him. You see, in his mind, attacking somebody for a mere $20 didn't make sense, because this was how much money he had in his wallet at the time. "Well, besides the money," I asked, "what else have they taken from you?" And you could have heard a pin drop. In fact, from the look of astonishment on his face, I swear I heard his heart break at that moment. And as Josh tried to fight back the tears that were cemented behind his wall of trauma, his interior fortress was crumbling. And in that moment, he realized that, yeah, he was allowing his attackers to take more than just $20 from him. He was also allowing them to take away his peace of mind, his identity, his joy, his intimacy in relationships, his well-being, and so forth. All the things he enjoyed about his life, he surrendered to the scars of his past. And Josh started to understand, as most people do, that sometimes, unconsciously, we set ourselves up for a life of unhappiness by reinforcing our scars as a way to protect against the potential and often more painful wounding by others. So within the logic of our internal defense mechanisms, such as, let's say, denial or projection, displacement, regression, or whatever, we tell ourselves that we are making the best out of a bad situation, and we are going to beat others to the punch, maybe even literally, or even breaking our own hearts before anyone else can. Now, paradoxically, these tactics work. Our physical scars had the potential to remind us of the emotional wounds that have become encapsulated to keep the world out and our pain in. If you're old enough, you'll remember the musical duo Simon and Garfunkel. Well, they have a famous line in a song, "And a rock feels no pain, and an island never cries." Well, the flip side to this perspective is that people who isolate themselves also never take the risks of experiencing peace and love and joy or any of the other positive emotions that remind us what it means to thrive and be fully human. Well, there's an English poet and preacher, John Donne. He lived back in like the mid-1600s. He makes this point even clearer when he wrote this poem. He said, "All mankind is of one another and is of one volume. When one man dies, one chapter is not torn out of the book, but translated into a better language. And every chapter must be so translated. As therefore the bell that rings to a sermon calls not upon the preacher only, but also the congregation to come. So this bell calls us all, but how much more me, who am brought so near to the door by this sickness? No man is an island, entire of itself. Any man's death diminishes me, because I am involved in mankind, and therefore never send to know for whom the bell tolls, because it tolls for thee." Yeah, no person is an island. No person is an island. And these harsh wounds, physical, emotional, psychological, even spiritual wounds, can be transformed. And I like to use the analogy of alchemy. See, in school, we may have learned in chemistry class that physical alchemy was and is concerned with altering and transforming the chemical properties within solid matter, such as changing lead to gold. Okay? But spiritual alchemy is concerned with freeing your vast spiritual self, which is being hindered within you by the unrefined parts of yourself, such as it's being hindered by your fears or limited personal beliefs or self-loathing and so forth. And spiritual alchemy is just vastly much more multifaceted. It's more fluid. It's ongoing. It's continuous. It's a continuous purification of our hearts, much in the same way that a smith will turn up the heat beneath a hopper that contains a raw mineral or a metal. And as the heat increases, dross or the impurities come to the surface only to be skimmed off, making the metal purer than what it was before. And then the process is repeated over and over again and again, and the heat gets hotter and hotter and hotter until the metal reaches its finest purity that it can. Well, if we're paying attention, we know that we too are going through a process of a spiritual alchemy of our own authentic selves. That is a call and an urge and an urgency to move into higher dimensions of our authentic selves. Because how often does it feel like the heat is being turned up through past and current events throughout the world? You know, and therefore, when going through the process of, let's say, a spiritual awakening or an awareness, sooner or later, we are confronted with the fact that there seems to be so much more to ourselves than the reality that we're living in and what we have grown accustomed to. But you know, still, we may find ourselves struggling with, why are we still triggered by certain events in the world? And yet at the same time, having a more intentional progression in our spirituality, or finding the courage to let go of non-life-giving perceptions and experiences in order to embrace more of a higher dimension of our authenticity. And this desire to live exclusively from a heart space of pure light and unconditional love. Well, you know, each dimension of reality has a different set of vibrations that govern what generally can and cannot be done by an individual soul or one who has an awakened consciousness that is in that particular dimension. You know, or, you know, again, this is the analogy that I use with kids. You know, it just makes it much easier to understand. The Native American flute, that the music that you hear at the beginning, in the middle, and the end of the show, comes from different flutes that I play during my own meditation. Now, all Native American flutes have their own key. They're all tuned to certain keys and ranges, and some are attuned to 440 hertz, which have a beautiful, wonderful sound. But there's one flute I play more often than the others that has been attuned to 432 hertz, which is, you know, 432 hertz is mathematically consistent with the universe. In other words, it's an earth tone. And music that has been tuned to 432 hertz is softer, it's brighter, and is said to provide greater clarity, and it's easier on the ears. Now, there have been a lot of scientific studies out there that demonstrate listening to music tuned to 432 hertz has other health benefits, such as lowering blood pressure, relieving stress, and allowing people to experience deeper, more peaceful sleep. Remember, 432 hertz is an earth tone. Now, if you listen carefully, there's a subtle difference between listening to music attuned to 440 hertz and listening to music attuned to 432 hertz. 432 hertz is certainly healthy for us to listen to, but we ourselves have to become attuned to listen to this vibrational level. And so the same thing is true as we apply this understanding to our spiritual awareness. Because we live in a 3D or three-dimensional world, or let's say we're living at a 440 hertz vibration, as it were, and we're governed by time and space and structures and form. You know, we live in a chronological order of linear time that consists of what we would call past, present, and future, that's experienced through our senses of sight, sound, touch, smell, and taste. And we're often pulled in the direction of our emotional opposites, such as how we are loved or how we're not loved, or what we have or what we do not have, or how we connect or how we feel disconnected, and are we good or are we bad? And this needs to be transformed. And it certainly can be done. It certainly can be done. So I would really love to hear what's on your heart about this subject. So again, if you'd like to call in, that number is 888-627-6008, and I'll be taking your calls after the break. Again, you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity, and I'm your host, Dr. James Houck. I'll be back with you in 1 minute. All right. Welcome back. I'm Dr. James Houck, and you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. There we go. Took a sip of water. I couldn't get it down fast enough coming out of the break. But tonight's show is The Alchemy of Authenticity, Transforming Dimensions of Traumatic Energy. Okay? Because that's where the transformation occurs. It's in the energy. Energy can never be destroyed, but it can be transformed. Again, hopefully another lesson we learned in physics class. Well, right before the break, I was talking about the Native American flute music that you hear at the beginning and the middle and the end. You know, the show that comes from the different flutes that I played during my own meditation. And that every Native American flute has their own key and range. And some are attuned to 440 hertz, which is very beautiful. But there's one flute that is my favorite. I have to say that I play it, you know, more than others. And that's the flute I have that's tuned to 432 hertz, which is mathematically consistent with the universe. Or in other words, it's an earth tone. And very subtle differences that you can hear between a flute that's been tuned to 440 hertz versus one who's been attuned to 432 hertz. Because, you know, the research has been done out there that demonstrate listening to music that has been tuned to 432 hertz has a lot of health benefits. It does lower blood pressure, relieves stress, and it allows us to experience just a deeper, more peaceful sleep. And not just listening to my flutes, but I mean, you can go on YouTube and you just, you know, just type in 432 HZ or hertz music. And, you know, you can just tell. But I do recommend wearing noise-canceling earphones or earbuds in order to get the full effect. And you'll be able to hear the very subtle differences listening to music that's attuned to 440 hertz versus listening to music attuned to 432 hertz. Okay? So, again, let's liken this to transforming traumatic energies. Okay? And actually living in a higher vibrational awareness. Okay? So the first step in raising our awareness, that is becoming attuned to, let's say, the vibration of 432 hertz, you know, just for the sake of argument, is understanding that first and foremost, we're not the body. Rather, we are souls within the body. Okay, as you know, religions out there tell us God knew us before we were born and knows everything about us, and yet we have yet to realize these in ourselves and to see ourselves as souls living in this world. And this is certainly more in line with who we truly are. Okay, and this might be especially difficult to grasp at first, because no matter, you know, how high our spiritual awareness or spiritual attunement becomes, we still have to contend with the physical form that gets hungry. Or we have to contend with illnesses, diseases, that the body feels the pain, and of course it needs to bathe. In fact, there's still a lot of work to be done, food to be grown, distributed, prepared, and enjoyed. And medicines need to be developed. And people need to be educated and trained in how this physical body works, as well as how to treat the body when it doesn't. Because certainly we need to take care of the body as that vessel that houses the soul. And yet still, what makes the difference between identifying as merely a physical body rather than a soul is that we no longer choose to live in fear of everyday life, let alone the dying process, because we are eternal. And we can walk each day and interact with others knowing that there is more to this life than what our senses can identify with. Because it's true, what we see and hear and taste and touch and smell is very beautiful. It's very good. But it's temporary. Everything else we do not see and hear and touch and taste and smell is eternal. It's true, our bodies also go through a change as our heightened spiritual awareness increases. And we need to honor that because we go through shifts in our awareness that may cause, you know, us to become more tired at times or more sensitive towards light or sound or temperature. You know, we may go through states of hunger or no appetite. And we might even think we're going crazy because nothing is making sense. But all of these experiences in the body means that we're shifting into a higher consciousness, and the body needs time to adjust in order to handle this increased vibration. And, you know, for me, it feels as though time speeds up and I often become more sensitive to noise. And, you know, some people report feeling lighter, which really has nothing to do with the bathroom scale. But so that's a plus. And as we begin this process of a higher dimension relationship with God and our spirituality, we are going to be reminded of all the negative psychological, emotional, and spiritual patterns within our relationships that keep us stuck in the past, because we haven't transformed them yet. We haven't transformed that negative energy. So what makes the difference, you know, between identifying as merely a physical body rather than a soul? We no longer choose to live in fear. Okay? So what about people who have suffered tremendous traumatic pain and psychological and emotional, even spiritual anguish in their life? Does all this talk about living in higher dimensions with God and ourselves and others simply pie in the sky, Pollyannish way of hoping in a better tomorrow? No, it's not. In fact, it exceeds all of our perceived expectations of who we think we truly are, let alone influences the kind of life we desire. So, in other words, let's bring it down to a clinical mental health context. Self-psychology, and you know, you've heard me talk about self-psychology before. It was developed by Heinz Kohut, and he understood our inability to overcome many issues in our lives as stemming from an underdeveloped sense of who we are. You see, he didn't see people as sinful or right or wrong. It's just you haven't developed a proper sense of who you are. In other words, there is tremendous potential that he saw for people to know themselves and to truly, fully know themselves. Okay, so not only are we simply not aware of who we are, but also we then are not going to be aware of what inner gifts and beauty and strengths we possess, because the external objects in our lives have been substituted for what we really desire in relationships: love, acceptance, peace, intimacy, nurturing, courage, and so forth. Well, in previous broadcasts, I have shared how trauma has the potential to disconnect us from who we are as soul. And the reason for this is because trauma places a distorted template over our perceptions. It distracts us. In other words, trauma says to us, this is all there is. This is all there is to you. This is as good as it's going to get. All lies and distortions that come from, let's say, other wounded people who have yet to embrace themselves as soul. In fact, once we embrace ourselves as soul, once we come into that awareness of who we truly are, and we begin to develop a sense of who we are, we're going to be astonished to see the power of our soul to not only transcend traumatic energy and transform wounded energy, but also empower others to do the same. Can you imagine what it would be like if you could help somebody else heal from their woundedness? psychologically, emotionally, physically, spiritually, just by looking for the potential in them to not just heal, but to really develop a sense of who they are. Well, you know I'm a lover of history. And so, as history teaches us, many, many people have feared the resiliency and power of the soul, and therefore have tried to silence its cry. You know, there's been killings, murders, genocides, starvations, forced assimilations, humiliations, degradations, looking at people as savages, primitive, backward, unworthy, unlovable, and therefore disposable, as those in control see fit. Well, although this is a very, very stark lesson in history, what's heartbreaking to me is that these atrocities have often been committed in the name of God by people who should see themselves as a soul. In fact, even when killing is done in the name of God, and we don't have to look too far in history for that, for those, the only thing that is truly advanced is the distorted view from those who will do anything to hang on to their so-called power. Well, you know, there is, for all this talk of traumatic illnesses and traumatic energy and woundedness and so forth, you know, there is a beauty to mental health counseling therapy, clinical mental health counseling therapy, that it's not just about alleviating mental health symptoms that trouble clients. It also involves helping people discover who they are and the gifts and the character strengths that they all have. In other words, helping people remove their emotional, behavioral, and/or spiritual obstructions so that they may embrace their authentic selves. In my book, Reclaiming Authenticity, I state that everybody has been given what they need when they come into this world. You know, their power, their energy, their gifts, their talents, resiliencies, and so forth. And yet, it's through various experiences that we're often misled to believe that in order to survive or even in order to thrive, we have to first deny who we are, and we have to first give away our power and settle for living by another's inauthentic, incomplete definition and rules. And as a result, we end up searching for our true selves in all the wrong places instead of looking within our own soul. But interestingly enough, that when people fully embrace the fact that they are a soul and are indeed precious in the eyes of God and the universe, the compassionate, nurturing side of humanity emerges in a very powerful way. In other words, it can't be stopped. And the issues of prejudice and sexism, egocentrism and racism and so forth all go out the window because these isms, shall we say, cannot dwell in the higher consciousness of that soul awareness. And even helping generations heal from traumatic issues in which they had learned mistrust or internalize, say, a skewed perception of who they are as a people or a person, which affected their attachments and which has affected their cognitive development, which has affected their social interactions, does have a multidimensional and multi-generational effect. And when generations of a family are able to come together and address these issues, they quickly realize that healing such wounds is not a matter of placing blame. You know, it's not a matter of pointing fingers. It's not a matter of saying, yeah, but, you know, instead, it's understanding the impact of what has been handed down through the generations and deciding right then and there it's no longer going forward. Because, yes, there is a level of accountability and restorative justice that also needs to be addressed and, more importantly, acknowledged. acknowledging perhaps the woundedness that has been passed on from many generations before. And again, it's true. People who have been wounded wound others. Hurt people hurt people. And if, let's say, one, a family member is struggling with an addiction, chances are that there's a family system in place that reinforces that woundedness. And so going back through the generations, then family members might become aware of how many others, had addiction issues. And it's not just addiction. Suicide is also another family dynamic that comes down through the generations. And families are certainly wise in these days to investigate how certain emotional, psychological, and sociological, and so forth, factors set the stage for such perceptions and behaviors to unfold. Even if suicide attempts have not occurred in a present generation, some of the woundedness that lingers and has been passed down through the generations, such as feelings of hopelessness and despair, may have infiltrated a family's perception of powerlessness. Well, for the most part, healing is a matter of unlearning these generational lessons that have affected what family members believe about themselves, as well as how these perceptions have affected their behaviors towards one another. And even if one's parents or grandparents or great-grandparents are deceased, healing can still be achieved. You can still transform the traumatic energy by understanding the dynamics of trauma that has been handed down in the family, as well as appreciating the resiliency and other character strengths family members possess. You see, emotional and psychological wounds are not the only thing that people may have inherited. Our character strengths, gifts, and skills were also handed down. And let's take this to a deeper level here, because this is what really needs to heal. Ken Doka, met him one time at the College of New Rochelle, New York, right outside the Bronx. And I was working on my dissertation at the time with disenfranchised grief and HIV, AIDS bereavement, suicide bereavement, and cancer bereavement. And I went up there to meet him and, let's talk about stigma. And he was very gracious, very kind, and he's long since passed. But Ken Doka states that there is an important task that we need to do when we want to heal from, let's say, the loss of a loved one or wanting to heal from a traumatic experience, and that is to rebuild our faith and philosophical beliefs that have been challenged or shattered or broken by a loss. This is very important. Wounds heal, but to rebuild our faith and philosophical beliefs that have been challenged or shattered or broken by a loss, very much important. And ironically, these are the last things to heal in a person. Because this is often a very slow, integrative process, because what we have come to know and embrace and trust in may be dissolving before our very eyes, according to what has happened to us. Just like the story with Josh. He couldn't believe that that would happen to him. And on some level, this can be a very frightening place for many people because, if they let go of their shattered assumptions, shall we say, what do they have? But this can also be a time that calls for courage and acceptance by placing ourselves in a state or a place of teachability to look deeper within ourselves and deeper in our relationship with God and the universe. So our negativity bias, let's say, means that we spend way too much time ruminating over the minor frustrations we experience. It could be anything from bad traffic or a disagreement with a loved one, but we often ignore the many chances we have to experience the wonder and awe and gratitude throughout the day. But still, many people believe that this sounds so idealistic that it may not be even possible in this lifetime to be able to achieve this. But the fact is that we, again, have everything we need to be able to not only reclaim our authenticity, but also embrace higher dimensions of our authenticity by simply incorporating four statements into our lives every day. And this is not mine. I got this from Ira Byock, B-Y-O-C-K. And it's a wonderful book. It's still in print. And if you do not have a copy, I'm going to ask you to go buy a copy, download it, put it on Kindle, read it every day. It is that important. It is this, that is that life-changing. And no, I don't make a dime off of any of this. But my life has been thoroughly transformed by this book. It's called Saying Four Things That Matter the Most. Or, as I call it, Finding Our True Selves Through Restoring and Being in Right Relationships. So, the four things that matter the most, and Saying Those Things by Ira Byock. And very simple. You know, you've, again, if you've been following this broadcast for a while, you've heard me talk about this many, many times, because this is one of these truisms that will follow us all the days that, you know, we take a breath on this earth. Excuse me. And it does restore us, and it helps us to be in right relationships. And it begins with this: forgive me for whatever the offense was. I forgive you for whatever the offense was. Thank you for, and I love you because. Forgive me, I forgive you, thank you, I love you. Forgiveness, gratitude, love restores relationships. And you want to change the mind and stop manifesting negativity in your life, as well as moving into, a higher spiritual dimension in your relationship with God, yourself, and others, then focus on forgiveness, gratitude, and love, and bring them into your heart. And as we heal and move out of our woundedness, we catch glimpses of being pulled out of out of a linear awareness into a non-linear awareness of who we are. Higher dimensions of our awareness of God, ourselves, and the universe always allow us to live in the pure light of unconditional love, knowing that we are all connected. We're all one. Our relationships are limitless, no longer perceived as being bound by time and space. And we can connect through our hearts, and we can feel the connection and love instantaneously. And through this, we can discover and rediscover our true creative power. And all experiences then are embraced with gratitude, as the soul knows that everything has its purpose for our own growth and expansion of consciousness. Well, you have been listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. I am Dr. James Hauck, and thank you for spending this hour with me. I'm so grateful. Again, drop me a line at www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity, and let me know what you thought of tonight's show. And if you want to hear it again, you can always go back into the archives under the same website and download it. And there's, of course, lots of other shows for you to listen to. So again, thank you for spending this hour with me, and I look forward to you spending another hour with me in about a week and a half. And so in the meantime, may everybody be safe, may everybody behave themselves, and may everybody strive to live in a higher dimensional awareness of love, forgiveness, and gratitude. Bye-bye.
for an answer, or just to leave 1,000 comments, or prodding around to buy a book by Dr. Hauk. It's all there. Just wander over to ReclaimingAuthenticity.com and click around. And we'll see you next Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Pacific, on BBS Radio TV.